Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. If you want to listen live, all you have to do is download the iHeartRadio app and search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Also, if you want to catch this show on video, be sure to check out Zumo TV, channel 719. That's where you can find Sports Grid's Fantasy Sports Network. Enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening.
Game time decisions continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. I'm on the grid, and so is Kevin Walsh. Steps up and in post WrestleMania. A lot of stuff to get to with Kevin, but before we do, I've got to compliment him on the den. I just love the look. You know what? It's like you said, there's a bar there too. I think you should probably set up shop actually at the bar. And you know, I'm a fan of Mr. Walsh. I like the look. It looks like basically like Archie Bunker's bar.
Yeah. I got something for you right by me. Because I had to move a bunch of stuff around. You can see this though. It is. I mean, I gotta imagine it's from the 80s or the 90s. It's a bottle of Bud Light as a bowling pin, because a lot of stuff down here, it's either Yankees,
that's amazing,
Cowboys, or it's a lot of his you know, bowling trophies. My dad legit. Like, I got, there's a couple like 300 plaques.
Really,
The one that I love the most, it's just because it's so unique to me, is it's 11 in a row. For 300, it's 12. He bowled 11 strikes in a row, and they gave him a plaque for it. And I just like, you know what? Yeah, he put that up because he wasn't upset about it. He's like, no, that's still badass, which it is. Yeah, it's the bar. I love this setup.
So 12 strikes. That's a perfect game. So he needed one more, but he's bowled perfect games. Ultra impressive. People don't realize how hard bowling is. I'm a fan of bowling, actually. Mm-hmm. I like to spend more time doing it. So let's get down to business. We'll get into the NFL draft a little bit, and the sports scene in general, to see any props. Me and Cam are finding a lot of great NFL props, but a lot of line movement too, as far as draft positioning with players are concerned. But WrestleMania, there was a lot of curiosity about WrestleMania going into it due to the lack of fans. Of course, it was supposed to be at Raymond James Stadium, home of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They moved it to their Performance Center in Orlando. And, you know, people wondered, how are they going to pull this off? Like, for an event that's supposed to have such a big feel to it, such as WrestleMania. But it seems to me, and wrestling fans are very critical, right? I mean, they're amongst the most critical out of any fan out there. Mm-hmm. They want to hate everything. Seems to me the WrestleMania got pretty positive feedback all around, even from the haters.
Yeah, I think it's hard not to, right? Because when you think about the circumstances, the fact that those guys and girls were willing to go out there, and, I mean, I would say 95%, I mean, if not all of them, like, gave it their all, as if there would have been a full crowd there. And you have to appreciate that. It was really interesting. I'll say the one thing about the WrestleMania weekend, it was being on both nights, it restored that feeling of when we're usually looking forward to games. Like, oh, what are you doing tonight? Like, oh, WrestleMania's on. Like, I'm doing something.
Well, there was something that a collective was watching together.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
That's the thing. There was something that there was the whole sort of, there was everybody watching at once that was cool about it. Now, as you stated, you know, you have to give credit to the wrestlers. They're performing under difficult circumstances. They're risking their own personal safety and health already in this business as it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, we heard a lot of stories about wrestlers being sent home and The Miz and, you know, exposing maybe the Uso brothers, and they were upset for real. And I found it interesting. Stephanie McMahon said, everybody that is here is voluntary. She kept on saying that. I'm sure almost they had to sign a waiver, basically. Stating, I'm sure he had, That's like Bill Belichick saying it's a voluntary practice. Yep. Like, okay. Vince McMahon, there's nothing voluntary about anything. Mm-hmm. But they would all want to perform at WrestleMania. But let's be real. And WWE's had a very bad year in the sense that, you know, Vince McMahon puts $375 million of his own money into the XFL. No fault of his own, the league shuts down again. And they were actually pretty successful. That's a lot of money that's just on the table right now for him that's sort of in neutral, plus lost revenue, et cetera. That sucks. Mm-hmm. WWE stock has been taking a hit all year. And listen, his stock goes up and down like a toilet seat at a Polish wedding. And that's Steve Ludzig's line, coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Shout out to my boy Ludzig. He's great. it's a great line. Yeah. Up and down like a toilet seat at a Polish wedding. So their stock takes a beating a lot, but that's going to happen. You know what I mean? It happens with all companies. So, but it really is taking a beating this year because of the creative, right? You're a wrestling fan. The WWE sucks. Let's just be real. It's not a good product. They aim to please everybody and don't please anybody. That's like their motto almost now.
Yeah.
And they fired or people resigned, like CEOs that aren't related to the McMahons, that people respected in the business community. Their stock plummeted after that. Mm-hmm. And then WrestleMania, they lose all the fans. But where I'm going with this, it seems like this is the first time in years almost that people are walking away. First time in years, I tweeted out, congrats to Vince and the WWE. Mm-hmm. Hell, even Broken Matt Hardy tweeted, said, good job, guys.
Yeah,
and that's saying something right from him.
Absolutely. I mean, and he obviously, the terms that he left on and part of the Matt stuff is because, and it's absolutely a fact, you can see his influence in what were the two biggest things that came out of WrestleMania.
Well, no coincidence, he tweeted after that Funhouse match. Yes, he's like, hey, guys, I see you.
Hey, which you got to appreciate. I'll tell you the thing about the WWE, and I'm sure we'll talk about this, is they had two nights, and it was concise, 3 hours or three and a half on night two, and it didn't overstay its welcome. I was at WrestleMania 35 last year. All in all, not a ton to complain about. You got a lot of the feel-good wins, and
but it was too long.
That's the thing. You're there forever. So, that's one of the biggest things that to me is coming out of this is how they will move forward with WrestleMania when hoping if we get back to normal. Are they going to try to make this a two-night event moving forward?
And, yeah, can they have 100,000 fans in that new stadium in Los Angeles next year? That's not a guarantee. Mm-hmm. I know it sounds extreme, and, oh, that's a long time away, but until there's a vaccination, you know, that's 12 months away. 12 to 18 months, okay, sort of, kind of. Mm-hmm. I'm sure... Listen, word was they would have done it in an empty stadium if they could have. Mm-hmm. They would have preferred just so they could have used all their toys and everything, right, in the videos that they did. And that was one thing I thought was really cool. They do a good job with that, don't they, as far as – except the New York thing. They went cheap last year. Like,
Yeah.
Remember people were like, "What's that's your set, really? You know, the bridge here and a Statue of Liberty? Like you know, like yesterday or when WrestleMania over the weekend – I was watching a lot of it and just, you know, the Tampa aspect and the pirates and the ships and like, they're very good at the video stuff. They used to be masterful at it, but it had that old school feel to it. It did feel like important. I was like, you're watching something real, which was cool. Yeah. Now you and I have talked about this. The All Elite Wrestling seems to work better without fans. And I think because they're older wrestlers, they carry things better. They're better on the mic. They're better actors. WWE, some guys are good at it. It seems the WWE, though, it's so built around fans. I found personally, and I didn't watch every match. I'm going to be real. No. Most of the matches in the ring, I was like, I'm like, it doesn't work, right? So, but from what I saw, and I would have the three best matches for me, what I really enjoyed, we got to start off with the Boneyard match. And I got to be real. I saw the hashtag Boneyard match, right? So, but I didn't know. I thought they just called it a Boneyard match and they were going to be in the ring and stuff. So I didn't know it was a WWE cinematic experience.
So let me just add this quickly. One of the reasons it was called a Boneyard match, and I actually have to give them credit because usually they wouldn't care. It was a Buried Alive match, but due to the times, super insensitive because they've had Buried Alive matches before. So they switched it to Boneyard match. It worked for me because Boneyard match is hilarious. And also, like, I'm surprised, like, Vince wasn't like, nah, screw him.
So what were they going to do? So it would have been a Buried Alive at the stadium then. And they would have had something there. Like, you know, who knows how they would have pulled that off, right? And we'll never know, I guess.
Yeah, right.
We'll never know. Yet, so they do the Boneyard match. And so I'm watching. And I saw a bit. I was like, oh, WrestleMania, I'll check in a bit. I was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, oh, I'll watch The Undertaker and AJ Styles. So I see AJ Styles, and he comes in, and he gets out of the hearse and stuff. I was like, yeah, I got to laugh. See, they made me laugh. I was like, yeah, that's good. Yeah, I was like, that's funny. He's like, hey, son, that's not so scary. He's like, they're supposed to be scary. He goes, it's not scary. And then, you know, The Undertaker, you hear Metallica, and, like, the, you know, you hear the motorcycle come in, and they show him driving down the road, and it's extremely well shot and stuff. So I'm thinking to myself, kind of, I'm like, damn, man. They're really eating up a lot of time with this intro, aren't they? I'm like, how long is this match going to be? So it's going on, and then I'm thinking, I'm like, man, this is like the longest intro ever. I'm like, are you guys going to start the match? And then I clued in. I'm like, this is the match.
Yeah.
It's like Boneyard match. They started going, and I caught on, you know, earlier than that. I was like, wow, this is it. I was like, wow. And then I was like, brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. Because let's be real. The Undertaker can't wrestle. Right. And he'd be exposed in an empty arena in a ring. It would just, you couldn't do it. Like it wouldn't work well. So I thought that they shielded him perfectly. And to be honest, and I'm a big Undertaker fan, but come on, man, he's been done for years, bro. That was the best he looked. Like, he pulled this off, this match, pretty good. Don't you think?
No. Yeah. You got to give Taker his props. It was a downward spiral for many years. He had the match in Saudi Arabia with Goldberg. That was horrible. Of course, like, coming off that Goldberg still hands up the champion, blah, 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 whatever. But The Undertaker then really tried to make a point to have a couple of good matches in a row. He did a tag team match with Roman Reigns that a lot of people enjoyed.
Save the ref on the way out.
Yeah. But exactly. But one of the interesting, cool things that came out of it was Kurt Angle apparently told Taker, he's like, work with AJ. And you'll have the best match you've had in plenty of years.
Oh, it's a good point you bring that up because it takes two to dance. And AJ was great, actually. He took a great beating. Mm-hmm. He was really good in the match. There were nice touches to it. It was just basically a combination of everything, right? Little Sons of Anarchy. Yeah. It really had that Walking Dead feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like, you know, that Negan and Daryl and stuff. They really had that southern sort of in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was tombstones around. It was like a movie set. But the music really added to it.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, it would have been a little awkward. My only beef with it, I thought it could have been more violent. Like, the production was very good. There was just sort of a lot of punching. And, like, he threw him off the roof.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, and I even tweeted, they're on the roof now. Like, I was excited. I'm like, oh, yeah, they're on the roof, right? So what's going to happen? And he threw him off the roof, but it was very movie-like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can totally see there was not, you know what I mean? He landed on fake hay type thing. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that high. I was a little, like I said, the carnage could have been more, in my opinion. Like, I would have liked to seen a little bit more, like, real violence in it.
That's how I feel about another match that I think we're going to be talking about. But I'll tell you, for me, the thing that I really loved about this was getting to listen to The Undertaker talk trash to him when he was in control. It was so enjoyable for him to be like hugging him. Ah, you did good, brother. I'm not going to hurt you.
I got to be honest, Kevin.
Yeah.
I was thinking at that time, I was like, damn, man. I was like, I've talked, like, The Undertaker might be dumb, but I'm glad that's not me with him right now. He's like, oh. You know what I mean? He's like even like the you know, even him, like, and you know it, The Undertaker over the years has been known, he's like the room enforcer, right?
Yeah.
You get out of hand a little bit, he raises it up a notch, right? And he's the guy that if in the old days, if you piss Vince off, you're like, oh, you're gonna wrestle The Undertaker, and it's not gonna be fun. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're in there with him. So I imagine he was saying, because that's who he is, He's like, oh, you want to be a big shot, a big man. He's like, you know what I mean? He's like, yeah, like the little interaction actually was good. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that aspect of it.
Yeah, I love that. And that's that you're right. Like, he was the judge in wrestler's court all those years. So it adds to the mystique of it. It actually, it's a funny story. It's why the Young Bucks, who are in AEW, they have a finishing move called the Indie Taker. And it came because one of them started acting as like a locker room general for like the boys on the independent scene. So Indie Taker, they kind of combined it, and it goes to the Undertaker character. But all in all, I thought it delivered. It's exactly what they should have done with the circumstances. Really, the only thing that upset me, and you probably loved it, right, because you love Metallica, is I wanted the Limp Bizkit rolling, 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 rolling. That's the theme song I needed him to come out to. If he's on a bike, that's the song that's got to be playing for me.
Yeah, it's not, and the Metallica song's not exactly like Metallica's best. You know, yeah. There's so many songs you can come out like. Okay, it was a nice, like I said, the music added to it, the cinematic, and like I said, that's what they literally called it, a cinematic experience.
Yeah, there was a score.
Yeah, no, and it was. There was a score to it. It was very, very well done. And you know what it was, too? It made you forget that there was no fans. It made you forget that, oh, like, this sucks, and never the world sucks, and you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was a nice distraction. I thought, and really, I would have done more of it. I would have been out of the ring as much as possible if I was them and came up with different concepts like that. So let's go into the next one, which was the Last Man Standing match, I believe it was called, mm-hmm. with Edge and Randy Orton. Yeah. And I got to be honest with you, I didn't realize Edge was even back. Like, oh. I knew he was back a bit, but I didn't realize he was back, willing to take a beating. Like, I thought he just sort of showed up and talked a bit sometimes, right?
Yeah. The documentary that the WWE did on Edge and his whole return. Now, I watched it after the match, but you can't watch that documentary and not be completely behind this guy. And it actually really, really worked out for them really well, Gabe, because they were actually, the way he said it was, they were kind of doing a documentary on life after wrestling already. So they had so much footage, and then it snowballed into this return. And they said, I mean, it was really like something that they could genuinely put up for awards because they had so much footage. Like, even when you had the spear at SummerSlam, and the story between him and Orton is the one that fans were really appreciating the most on a weekly basis through Raw. I remember on In-Game Live, Cam goes, Walsh, I just got to ask you quickly, is Randy Orton about RKO Beth Phoenix? And I'm like, keep on, Cam. And he was all into it.
Edge. Edge, home of the Toronto Raptors.
Oh, they had a whole thing about the arena and what it means to him. It's where he met Beth Phoenix. Is where
where the Raptors play? Yeah, that arena. Yeah, the Canada Center now, the Scotiabank Center.
Had their last singles match there. That's where they turned on each other. He had a world championship match with Cena. He talked about like that building means more to him than any other place in the world.
Yeah, and you know what? I know it's not that old. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll continue the WrestleMania conversation with Kevin Walsh. Get on the grid.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice, we play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build and optimize lineups for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
so grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Renzi. We're throwing it down with Kevin Walsh. We're talking some WrestleMania. Talked about the Boneyard match into the Last Man Standing, which also really took place. So it was between Randy Orton and Edge. Mm-hmm. I wasn't aware of the full storyline, but I knew it was about Beth Phoenix. And yeah, Randy Orton's not scared of hitting a woman. That's one thing he's never been shy of.
Yeah, nobody.
He's a good villain, though. He really is just a good jerk. Yeah, mm-hmm. You almost get the feeling that he's like that in real life. He's so good at it.
No, he is. Like, there's plenty of stories about what Randy Orton has done behind the scenes.
Yeah, that he's just a jerk, right? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, they always say the best wrestlers are the ones who are being themselves when they turn it up a bit. That's Randy.
From what I understand, like, most of the divas hate him. I don't know if, like, he's upset them one by one along the way, but yeah, I know he's not the most beloved guy. No. But he is entertaining. He's good at what he does. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that match pretty much spread out throughout the performance center.
Yes.
Right? You know, they were in the gym area. They're in the garage area, which another creative way of getting them out of the ring with no fans, mm-hmm. which I thought was cool. But at the same point in time, I don't know if they sample tested it, because we talked about, like, you said, oh, they had to score for the Boneyard match, yeah, and it had music underlying it, and it made a difference. And it wasn't over the top, but it was very just sort of like, doom, doom. It was like a horror movie. Like, once in a while, like, to build the drama, doom, doom. And then, mm-hmm. like, they wouldn't play music for a second, but they used music marvelously. Even though they were indoors in a performance center, I thought maybe music could have been good. Tense music. Since they were in the thing, have music playing in the performance center in the background a little bit, just to sort of add just something. Now, I like the fact you could hear them talking to each other, too, and you could hear everything. Yeah. But it was a very long match, because I was watching it, bro, and I went to pick up my pizza and French fries, and I came back, and I was like, damn, these guys are still going. And they beat each other up pretty good. I got to be honest, though. There was one time when they were in the gym, they set it up. They looked like I wanted them to throw them through the glass.
Oh, that would have been good.
Like, do you remember, like, they sort of, the glass was there, and I was like, come on, guys. You guys got to raise it up a notch a bit here.
So,
like, I get it, and you can see Edge's back was welted, and he did, like, get hit for real a bunch. Mm-hmm. But there wasn't that signature holy that wrestling fans like. That wasn't that, like, oh, my God, right? It never came in that match.
No, it's a good point, right? So the match was 36 minutes and change.
Wow.
What's the... Whoa, like, aside from the finish, right? Because there's always going to be the finish, right?
No, that's the thing. It was a good match, but they didn't have that moment.
It didn't. And part of the issue was, I was talking about it with my brother, and in the first 2 minutes of the match, Edge was down for a 9 count. If anybody doesn't know how Last Man Standing works, it's you have to be down for 10 seconds. He's down for a 9 count because he gets hit with 2 RKOs right off the bat. And to keep the continuity and the selling, he's now got to go to a lot of 9 counts, and we spent a lot of this match counting off of moves. I mean, just punches to the back that knocked Edge off of his feet. And I understood why in the context of the story, but it was almost as if the match was at the same pace the entire time.
That's a good point.
And I just, like, I mean,
like, God. Even at the end, like, and even, and it, that's the whole thing, but that's why they get paid to do it. Because they're on that truck, they're on the top of it, and it's that sense of danger. Once Orton sort of, I thought he was going to fall. Like, once Orton sort of slipped a bit, he didn't slip. It wasn't like a panic, but even he realized, oh, man, like, mm-hmm. like his leg was dangling off, and he sort of, like, he got himself closer. But they were very deliberate up there, and you could tell they were very worried about falling off of it. But they weren't even that high. And like you said, I kept waiting for that moment. Because mm-hmm. they were up there, I'm like, oh, yeah, he's going to throw him off the top. You know what I mean? And they even teased us, Walsh, because they had ladders everywhere in there. Because I'm like, oh, what a convenience. So they happen to have a ladder there. I'm like, all right, what are you going to do with the ladder? Something like, come on, Edge. Like, jump up and land on a pickup truck on him or something. Like, I was, like you said, there was that. And then it was kind of like, eh, it was over. It's a good point. It was good, but it never got better. It just sort of went along.
Right. And that's the problem is you, when you're doing good or average work for 36 minutes, it becomes kind of bad. It starts to, you know what I mean? Like, that trip for you to go get pizza and french fries probably made this match sit better for you than me.
That's a good point. I was, and I even went to the store, too. I was gone probably about 8 minutes type thing.
Yeah. I mean, people started making tons of jokes. You know, I think there's going to be a vaccination by the time this thing is done. Like, there's all, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of good ones that you would like on the wrestling Twitter with that match. I just, that was a thing for me. I think they could have gone about it a little bit different way. Like, Randy Orton dressing up as a cameraman and giving a sneak RKO doesn't really apply to the story, right? The story is that Randy wants to put Edge on the shelf because he shouldn't be back wrestling. It's too dangerous and he's not caring about his family enough, right? But Edge is saying, that's BS, you're jealous and you want me gone because I'm taking your spot. It genuinely is a brilliant story. Nowhere in that story does Randy Orton dressing up as a cameraman fit in. Like, he should have just walked out. I wanted the bell to ring and for them to stare at one another, right? Talk that trash, right? Go ahead. Like, throw me a couple bleeps.
You know what? They could have pulled it off in a ring, too, because they're both good wrestlers, right?
Yes. And I like using, for a last man standing match, going all around the Performance Center makes all the sense in the world. That's great. That's very, very smart. But that's where we were for 34 minutes.
Yeah. Without, and as I stated, without real chaos.
Yeah.
Without a real, like, you know, when he was good when he pushed the metal cart at him.
Right, but he didn't hit him.
Exactly, and it was like, you keep teasing us with stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I said, like, and he even had the lights on the glass, and I was like, oh, yeah, here it comes. Mm-hmm. Here it comes. I was like, they set up some, you know, they got the softer glass set up. They're going to go right through. They didn't. They went through the door. They walked through the door. I was like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. Go through the wall or something.
Yeah.
You know, like in the old days, the Ultimate Fighter,
mm-hmm.
you know, they used to do it deliberately, Kevin, where the walls were thin and the door. So Brock Lesnar, poof, and he goes through like the wall.
Was it like Rampage who broke the door?
Yeah. Right? Like you said, like people were like, damn, man, that door was like set up more than WWE. Like, bam, like he ripped the door off the hinge easily. But
yeah,
we like to see that. Right. I want to see someone go through a door, go through a window, you know? Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, because I didn't know if you saw this. It was one of those things where, like, people were talking, like, man, you had the chance to edit this down, and I don't know how you left this in. And it's, man, like, you got to think that these two guys would be upset at themselves for maybe not catching it. But they had kind of that spot where Orton's, like, hanging Edge using gym equipment.
Yeah.
And this is on the heels of the Benoit documentary that just came out, which is how obviously that played out. And there's a lot of people very uncomfortable with that spot. And it's one of those things where there's no way that those two guys would do that deliberately. That is absolutely
they got caught up in the moment. And
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You had the chance to edit this. And that's the other thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's a good
36
point, yeah.
And change, and they had the chance to edit it. Those guys are probably going for 45 minutes, if not more.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's not live. They could have shortened it down. You know, one thing with Chris Benoit, had him on my show. Not like weeks before.
Wow, yeah.
But probably like months
mm-hmm.
type thing. So fresh, in fact. Pretty crazy. I was on Sirius at the time. I used to have wrestlers on all the time, once a week, twice a week, and had Benoit, and he cut a bunch of promos for me.
Wow.
And it was nuts. It was like, I'm Chris Benoit. Vent your rage. Otherwise, and he's like, tune in. Otherwise, I'm going to come like... I had like promos of Benoit threatening people.
Yeah.
At the time, it seemed cool. This is the crippler. I'll come and cripple you. Like, he was like, basically did all these things. Yeah. I know where you live. I'm going to come here. Like, he got all these promos. And I remember like a month later, I was like, oh my God. I was like, and they deleted them right away in the system. Yeah. They said, no, this guy's got to go. Like, can't, like, so I understand, but like you said, like, I don't think it was a deliberate thing that Vince was like, oh, make sure to do that.
No way.
Right? Those guys got, they were there. They saw it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, all right, let's get into the, the Funhouse match,
yeah.
Which was very similar to me, like the Boneyard match. And you had to understand me on this, that same thing. I was like, is this the intro? Like, what the hell is this? I was like, are they ever going to, like... And then I sort of clued in. I was like, no, this is sort of like, I figured it out. I'm like, this is the match. Because I got to be honest, like, when Cena walked into the funhouse, I got a kick. I was like, I started laughing. I like that puppet, the chick with the black hair and stuff. So the other puppet talking, it's a good bit. I like it. It was all good. So when he's in the funhouse, I was like, oh, cool. I was like, they're going to fight in this funhouse. They're going to beat the crap out of the place. They had that door where it said abandon all hope. So I was like, you know what? They'll fight. He's going to get thrown through a wall in this house. And then they're going to go into some sort of, I figured like a haunted house thing, like with a wait in that, you know what I mean? Behind in the door, and Bray Wyatt would be waiting for him. But it was all video edited. You know what I mean? And it was literally like for anyone, like, you know, I mean, I was getting people that were tweeting me and they're like, dude, I did mushrooms. This isn't like, this is like freaking me out. Like if you were on acid or something, it was like Pee Wee's Playhouse times 10, yet with wrestling humor. And listen, the Vince McMahon puppet with the horns, that was classic stuff that Vince would even allow that, right? That he made himself to be the devil.
Oh, that's great. I mean, it's one of the things, Matt Hardy, because he recently, you know, went to AEW, he did a podcast with Jericho, because that's what everybody who leaves does. They do a podcast with Jericho. And he talked about Hardy had a similar match in WWE, and Vince was basically like, I don't get it. I don't get this at all. And it wouldn't surprise me if for a lot of this match, Vince was like, yeah, I don't get it. But people told him, like, just let it go kind of thing.
Oh, it was the creative team. And that's the thing. The WWE creative team has been ripped. They're very sanitized.
Yeah.
It's repetitive. Like, that's one of their big issues. I give credit to the creative team for thinking outside the box and John Cena for even going along with it. Because, you know, you figure John Cena could have the juice and say, this is dumb. I'm not doing this. Like, I'm not.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But the fact that John Cena can act is good. And there's one thing about Bray Wyatt, which I saw people say they loved it. It's classic. It was so unique. Other people were like, oh, it was too weird. But Bray Wyatt is really good at talking. He's a great actor. He's very good at the characters. He can change voices. He's on a dime. Like, he can go into different characters, which is very impressive.
Yeah.
He's not a great wrestler, per se, though. And people are like, oh, I would like to see more wrestling in a match. It's like, once again, those two would have been exposed in a ring. They couldn't have wrestled 18 minutes in a ring, these two guys. Like, it wouldn't have worked, right? They need, and Cena needs the crowd. So all things considering, I thought it was kind of brilliant, actually, what they did. I mean, looking back, instead of having no fans, people would look back and go, man, that was the most unique, strange WrestleMania ever.
100%. And the thing about the Firefly Funhouse is it was a cohesive story. And it ripped Cena's career apart from his failures to the things that were missed opportunities, right? Like the ruthless aggression stuff, which Cena openly says, I hated it. It was awful. It almost got me fired, right? The little Johnny Large Meat segment, which is absolutely hilarious, but it also takes a shot at Cena for only caring about getting bigger and not actually spending any time becoming a great wrestler, right? And then
so there's Cena, though, with a sense of self-depreciating, self-humor, making fun of himself. Yeah,
exactly. And for people who maybe, if they didn't get it on first, I've already watched the thing twice. I loved it. So, like, the NWO stuff, what that is so in the match at 30, Bray's like, hit me with the chair, right? Because the whole story at WrestleMania 30 was basically Bray trying to say John Cena's a monster. And he could have turned heel, right? And in that moment, he didn't. He stays face, and Cena stays face forever, and it's always the big what if. What if Cena turned heel? The NWO connection is the guy who had a very similar beginning career, Hogan, actually turned heel and went Hollywood Hogan. So that's what that was. Cena coming out with the NWO belt, doing a little rock and roll, is the idea of what would have happened if Cena turned heel. You see the flashbacks to the signs. If Cena wins, we riot. Cena sucks, because that's the result of him never actually turning. I mean, it really was a brilliant, brilliant piece that they put together.
Yeah, like of the history. And you know what? Like, you know it more intricately than I do, even with those little details of everything. Yeah, it spanned their careers, right? Of all their characters, so to speak, into one. Yeah. And I did think it was cool. And I saw that coming too. I'm like, oh, yeah, the Fiend part's coming now soon, right? It's going to sort of culminate with that. And the Bischoff stuff, which was great.
Mm-hmm.
And then after, you see Bischoff.
Great.
Like, literally baffled, right? Like, mm-hmm. literally, Bischoff, like, did a little, like, tweet Periscope.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, he goes, wow. He goes, I just got fired, but I was just on WrestleMania, I guess. He's like, he was like, that was weird, man. Like, he was actually, like, baffled for real. It wasn't like that he was like, wow. He was actually like, I don't know what I just watched.
Yeah. It was. He had a good line, though. He was like, I don't know anybody that gets fired and then months later made
a headline. Yeah,
being hired. It was good.
It was, like I said, and Bray Wyatt really is good. I'll give him credit at it. Like, very difficult to shift characters like he does. Yeah. Like I said, I noticed that with him years ago, even when he started to become popular. Mm-hmm. I was like, this guy has charisma. People like him, but he's not a great wrestler. That's why he needed those other guys around him before. Mm-hmm. So now he's more of an entertainer, and he's damn good at it. But, you know, we'll see, Kevin. If you know, hopefully WrestleMania next year is normal, because that means sports are going to be normal again right now.
I'll just add this quickly. I think the most interesting thing is, right, without a doubt, the Firefly Funhouse match and the Boneyard match were the things that people loved about WrestleMania the most.
What are we missing?
And, well, no. Forget that for a second. Is Vince always likes to do what, like, the fans love. He'll do it over and over and over again. But that stuff is difficult if you do it in the crowd, like, with a crowd there. That's kind of an interesting little, like, mix. So it'll be interesting to see how much he actually does it.
I'm looking here at Mandy Rose.
Yeah.
Are you telling me Mandy Rose is a Gale?
Martino's like related to her. I think maybe she went to Iona. He knows
she's from Westchester.
Yeah, she did. She went to Iona. I mean, come on, that's the thing. We were at WrestleMania. How about
you guys, Iona's taking the world over.
How about Rick Pitino?
What's the deal with her, though?
On WrestleMania. Did you see that?
What, Pitino was betting on it?
Yeah. He made a bet with his brother. He goes, look, if Brock wins the main event, you come to Iona. If Drew wins, we'll go to Minnesota. His brother got hit with the bait and switch. That's why the older brother always wins, right? His brother goes, I can't go against a gopher, so give me Brock. Clown move.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you, because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn, and most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci, throwing it down with the Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart. Kevin Walsh going to step up and then we're going to talk some WrestleMania. Cam? You know, I didn't watch all of WrestleMania on Saturday night and Sunday night, but I seemed to get all the cool. I seem to see all the cool matches because I see, like, I didn't miss anything, basically. And I did watch it. I had it up. But I found that the in-ring stuff just doesn't work for the WWE. Even though it was WrestleMania, it was kind of awkward. But I'll give credit. WrestleMania did a great job, actually. Very, very sinister, dark, strange. Like, people don't even, you know, honestly, it was some of the strangest stuff that I've ever seen in wrestling before. they had a cool boneyard match on Saturday night. And very, very good idea, actually, Cam, because it doesn't work in the ring. And The Undertaker's not a very good wrestler to begin with. So instead of, like, in a ring, it was like a movie. They had, like, music playing. It was, like, in a cemetery.
Yep.
And it was very, like, Walking Dead-ish. There was, like, a barn, and, like, there was the druids came out. And, like, it was in, like, the woods. You know what I'm saying?
I love it.
You didn't realize there was no fans. They didn't need no fans. Edge and Randy Orton beat the crap out of each other. Yep. And that was cool stuff. Like, it wasn't in the ring. They were, like, they went all around the building everywhere in, like, a hardcore match. That was really, really cool. And John Cena and Bray Wyatt, the Funhouse match was like bizarro world, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
And people bet on this stuff. It wasn't like a wrestling match. It was literally like just 18, 20 minutes of bizarro, acid-induced weird stuff, yeah. Man.
Like trick mirrors and all that stuff?
It was like a bunch of video clips that they did.
Wild.
So there would be head-to-head, and he would sort of hit him, and there would be like a skit, and it would be really weird, but it was really cool. It was really cool, but it was so strange and bizarre. And then at the end, he sort of knocked him out, and he won. Like, that was, like, basically, like the Boneyard match, Cam, when it started, I thought it was the pre-fight intro, because it was all video, yeah. Right? I'm like, all right, when's the match going to start? I'm like, man, this intro is long. Then I realized this is the match. Like, well, I'm watching the match, like, type thing. It was very...
They figured it out.
Yeah, like I said, it was very different. And I've been around, and even for me to, like, I had to watch and wrap my head around what I was watching.
Yeah.
It shows how creative it is. They took a chance. Not everybody loved it. I saw some people like, oh, it was just too weird. And, oh, it was, I don't even know what I was watching and stuff like that. But it was actually pretty fun. So we'll get Walsh's take on that. So we were talking about the virtual racing going on, eSport or whatever, with Bubba Wallace somehow losing Blue Emu as a sponsor. But the term virtual is being used a lot now.
Yes.
And the NFL draft, quote unquote, will be a virtual draft. Mm-hmm. You and I talked about this.
We predicted it. Yeah.
Yeah, that, you know, that's basically what it's going to be. But one thing I've noticed, and I know they announced that the draft is going to be on Zoom. They're using the Zoom platform. And Cam, you know, anyone that watches the news knows over the last couple of weeks, Zoom have been getting penetrated hardcore. Kid on the Rangers did a Q&A with fans, like, like Nazi groups hijacked the Q&A. Oh, yeah. Woman's group was doing, like, they're jerks. There's real jerks out there. Yeah. So, like, there was, like, a big women's conference. Somebody decided to put, like, hardcore porn on it. So, like, these women doctors are talking and stuff, and then boom, like, they can't control it. Like, these hackers, like, jump in. Imagine the NFL draft, bro. And the Minnesota Vikings are on the clock, and then boom, someone starts hacking into the Vikings computer and stuff.
Yeah.
The
Vikings
select. This isn't foolproof. I'd be very concerned.
Yeah. Next thing you're like, what the? What? This is a family program.
You,
like,
and I do this all the time, Cam. Just imagine.
Yes.
Imagine Mike Zimmer. This stupid Zoom. What the hell? I just logged off. What do I get me back on? Oh, my God. He's going to be on the phone. Take this guy.
It's funny, man. And that's the thing. Like, we're talking about stocks. That show that I did with Blessing, like, a year ago, like, we were on Zoom. Crystal clear, whatever. The whole world's using Zoom. Educational videos. People are going to school on these things. You talk, we're having our pre-show meetings on it. Like, I don't know the amount of usership and a percentage that has gone up with Zoom, but I'll tell you one thing, man. It's absolutely insane. And you're right. When that many people go on it, you're going to get freaks and bad groups. So I'm with you. Don't be surprised if something crazy happens during the NFL draft.
All right, let's get into our questions of the day. They're always fun to get into. Theodore, Theo Knows on Twitter, steps up and it says, any good flying airplane stories? Well, me and Cam have too many, actually. We'd be here for hours. But
my favorite is, though, when you got bombed, spilled the wine, on Delta or whatever, ripping it. Next thing you know, you had your, like, first time in your life, you're ever wearing, like, khakis or some bad, interesting color that's not, like, black jeans, and you get a $300 voucher and a deal for a trip. I thought they did a pretty damn good job, and we were wasted. That was a great one.
Yeah, the time me and Cam went to Mississippi State, to see our boy Jukesy, may he rest in peace.
Ooh, what a weekend.
Yeah, it was real hard to get out there. It's not easy to get to Tupelo, Mississippi, let me tell you. So we had to fly to from Toronto to Memphis. And we had to drive like 4 or 5 hours or whatever. But the thing is, big mistake. And, you know, listen, I've been around long enough to know once in a while you do it, it never ends well. It never ends well. But when you start drinking at the airport before you get on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
It's one thing to drink on the plane, and that doesn't end well. No. But when you drink at the airport, and me and Cam started drinking at the airport, like while we were waiting to get on the plane for Memphis, we get on the plane. Not a lot of people on the plane. Not a lot of people going to Mississippi, right, from Toronto at the time. So we're on the plane, and we're getting hammered, except they don't mind. Like the steward, the flight attendants were cool and stuff, and we drank them out of everything pretty much, literally and figuratively. We're drinking like red wine at this point. We're onto the red wine. We went through the vodka. And like, she's like, you guys pretty much drank us dry.
Yep.
And we get to the red wine. There was a little turbulence. The lady spilt the red wine on me. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
She spilt it on me, like, toof. But it went all over my pants. Like it was like my pants were ruined type thing. Yeah, I got $250. It was $250. She said, sir, hold on a minute. She came back. She said, I'm very sorry. She gave me a voucher. And it was good for credit. I used it, too. It was good for credit, $250. Delta Hotels or Airlines or whatever. It might have been $300.
Yep.
And, we got there. But, you know, great time. The time, though, we told the story briefly about March Madness a couple of years ago. That was the last March Madness that we were at. That I was busting Cam's balls. And it's funny because I was confused. Normally, I'm very aware. No, it's Sunday night, Saturday night. Yeah. But I don't know why that airline, Cam, that what the website was very confusing.
It was.
I literally even asked the lady. I called. And I said, I don't want to book. I don't want to leave Saturday night at 1 in the morning. She means Sunday morning, sir? I'm like, no. Oh. What part of this is so confusing? I want the red eye Sunday landing Monday morning. Right? So she's like, that's what you're on, sir. I'm like, okay, fine.
Okay, yeah.
So we're in Vegas. It's March Madness. Saturday, we're having a great time. It was a great time in Vegas that time. You know, we're there 3-4 days. Saturday comes. Cam's like, oh, my God, I thought my flight was tomorrow night, Sunday night, but it's tonight now, Saturday
night. It is.
And I'm like, oh, how can you do that? I double-checked. You're an idiot. Oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
I'm like, who the hell leaves Vegas on a Saturday night? That's what we came here for. It's March Madness. And I'm like, poor Cam. I'm like, you got to cancel it. And you're like, oh, I'll just bite the bullet and I'll leave. And Cam's getting hammered because he knows he's leaving. So Cam's getting hammered. I'm like, poor Cam. We're all laughing at Cam. Poor guy. Yeah. He misbooked the flight. Guys, I'm standing there. It's like 6 at night in Vegas. Yeah. My phone starts buzzing. And look, it's like, you have 2 hours to board.
Yeah. How's your flight doing? Yeah, I told you. You screwed up.
I looked at you. I said, oh, my God. I'm on your plane. We were on this, me and Cam both screwed up the same plane. Remember, I was like, oh, my God. I had to literally run to my room, like, throw everything in a bag. Like, literally, I was like, oh, like, I got to leave. So I, like, ran, but there was the Michigan-Houston game was on. So it was basically run, pack the bag, get the bags ready, watch the game, and then go.
I don't know. That wasn't crazy. It was them, man. I don't know who was working that day, but, man, we got
screwed.
Oh, yeah. We got pooched.
That's never happened to me before. I've booked that flight a million times. I knew there was something off when I spoke to the lady, too. I was like, are you sure? Like, it's Saturday. Oh, yes, sir. But in the end, it worked out because, basically, Michigan beat Houston at the buzzer, won a bunch of money, literally had no time to lose it. Like, we cashed the money and walked out of Circus into a taxi and went to the airport. And ironically enough, me and Cam nearly missed our plane because we were eating Chili's. We went to Chili's to eat before our plane.
Excellent.
We got caught up in a moment.
Guy was a Michigan fan, too. He loaded us up. That Chili's in that airport, delicious, man. Those tenders.
I got a million airport stories. I got a million airport, the big show. I could go on. But here's our main man, Kyle, in Atlanta. Will wearing masks and gloves become the new normal after this? And how long will that be the new normal for? Yes, it will be the new normal. Listen, there's no vaccination for 18 months. You know, there's people, I think people will be wearing masks at sporting events. I think masks are sort of the thing of the future. You know, you see, not to get too, into geopolitical, but just basically, you see how how quickly the air is cleaning up without us flying around and damaging
exactly. Exactly.
Like, we do so much damage that as it is now, in the next like 15 years, you'll need a mask because the air quality will be so bad.
I agree with that. And a lot of
climate change and global warming, whether you believe it or not, it's real, guys. So, and then it'll be just like this pandemic, Cam. I swear. It's going to be like the year 2042. They're going to be like, why did California just fall into the ocean? Why are there flash floods? Why are there no crops? Why are there our crops burned down and it's overheating? And, well, because you didn't pay attention before. Don't act surprised. I saw a thing about that, about in the future, you'll basically, it'll be like this all the time.
Yeah.
People won't want to go outside. The air quality will mess you up. You'll need a mask when you do. Like, but in the near future, for Kyle, I think literally probably for about the next 2 years. I think in 2 years, we're starting to get back normal. Once there's a vaccination and people feel safe and they're not, I don't care, I get it. I can't get it, or if I get it,
I get a vaccine.
It's like the flu or something. But as long as there's unknown death around it, and the thing is too, and I'm not a scientist, obviously, but anyone that's been paying attention to this knows, like the Spanish flu came in 1918, right? I just like more people died from it in 1920, though.
That's you know what I'm saying?
The Black Plague in 1366 or whatever.
You think safe? You gotta be
it was actually like 1370 that it really, like, these viruses show up. It's just an appetizer. They regroup and then they come for like the, they think, oh, you think you beat it, huh? And then they come for you. It's like every time, like everyone knows this. Like, and it's happening in China now. So guys, it's not like just in May or in like June. Okay, everyone can go outside again. You got to mitigate this stuff. Not saying you want to sit inside forever at home, all of us, but regular society, we're like, I think probably about 2 years, Cam.
That's the best. Just an appetizer. Yeah, it's a very good way of putting it. Another thing is, a lot of these guys have been proactive. Remember people, Gabe, in big cities, they've been wearing masks for years. They already were ahead of the game with this stuff. Yeah, but I agree 100%.
All right. Always love the questions. All right, we got Jordan Kovacs. It's a tough one. Better college running back, Barry Sanders or Bo Jackson?
I'm going to have to go with Bo Jackson in this one. I think Bo Jackson, what he did at Auburn, like Barry Sanders, he was a stud too. Remember Thurman Thomas? Also, they had a dual threat. He played a couple years at Oklahoma State too. But I'm going to have to just say Bo Jackson for dominance, Gabe. He was just too good. He ran over everybody, kind of like the Bo Jackson in Tecmo Bowl. You can't talk. Five guys on him, he'll still get to the touchdown. Barry Sanders is an elusive guy and had great runs, but I'm going to have to go with Bo Jackson from Auburn.
Yeah, I'll lean. You know what? I think Barry Sanders, as good as Barry Sanders was in college, he was actually even better in the National Football League.
Yep.
So, obviously, Barry Sanders is a better NFL back than Bo Jackson was. Bo's career is pretty short in the National Football League. But Bo Jackson, oh, you know, Herschel Walker, better than both of them.
Yes, I agree.
Herschel Walker, more dominant college running back. To me, he's the best college running back of all time, Herschel Walker. You know, Bo Jackson, I was lucky enough, I was living in Los Angeles when he was on the Raiders. At the time. So I saw him play in person, which is like super cool. And he was that good. You know what? You know, he was that good. You know who the quarterback was when I was there? I was there a few years though, but one of the
guys. What year were you there?
Like 89 to like 91, 88 to like 91-ish type thing.
Jim Plunkett was there in 83, 84.
No, that was Jim Plunkett retired.
So,
blonde guy, Jay Schrader.
Oh, Jay Schrader. Yes. Jay Schrader.
Guy had a cannon, right? They flip bombs like Jay Schrader.
You're right. Like a weird Jay Schrader. Yeah. Forget about that
blonde
guy.
Blonde guy. Yeah. Jay Schrader. Yeah. Redskins too.
Yeah. Redskins.
Yeah. It was very good. Vince Evans. I don't even remember.
Vince Evans. Black quarterback.
Black guy. He was one of the first black quarterbacks actually in the NFL. He'd been around a while. First starting quarterbacks. Vince Evans was there. You know, the coach was one of the years I was there. A lot of coaches when I was there. But one of the coaches was Mike Shanahan.
That's true.
Hard to believe. Mike Shanahan. They fired him after like a year. And he went to Denver, and the rest is history there. Art Shell,
legendary Raiders coach.
Art Shell was the coach for the most part. But I was going to say, I was not at the game. I did go to a lot of games. I did go to a lot of Raider games. But I didn't go to this game. Because I think the Bills were playing in the playoffs the same day. I don't know why I didn't go. I couldn't went. I didn't. And I was at home, but I was living in Los Angeles, Bo Jackson's last game. Like, I remember I saw him go down. I was like, that's not good. He's not getting up. And it's crazy because anyone that remembers Bo Jackson's last tackle and last play, it wasn't vicious. Bo Jackson was sort of breaking away, running down a sideline against the Bengals.
Bengals, yep.
And dude on the Bengals sort of typically like ran behind him, sort of jumped on him, and they both fell and they landed. Not violent at all, really. And Bo had a bad hip and he had knee problems. And something snapped. Like he heard something pop. And it was pretty crazy. When they landed, Bo told him, I'll never play again.
Yeah.
Like literally on the spot. Like, yeah, he goes, I'm done. He goes, that's it. And I guess he was a little freaked out. And Buddy was freaked out. He goes, man, I just killed Bo Jackson. Like type thing. Like, you didn't want it. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And Bo told him, it's not you. And he told him. He said, it's over. And Bo knew. He goes, I'm done. And that was it. Like, it was that bad at the time. And the Bengals ended up winning the game. Bengals won that game. But, yeah, Bo Jackson, such a great dynamic running back.
DailyRoto.com. Learn from the game's best DFS players. We don't just give you premier advice. We play every day. All major sports, all year round, we never stop. Industry-leading DFS tools and custom projections. And now, the DailyRoto.com Optimizer. In minutes, build an optimized lineup for cash games and tourneys. Learn from the game's best DFS players. Join DailyRoto.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.